Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
To Mo Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And we're a man down this evening for this recording. You know, the NFL draft, it can be rough on people. And I think Miles might be in the car on his way up right now to TCO to see if he can have a conversation with the folks up there about draft strategy for tomorrow. But it's okay. You know, I got the man, the myth, the legend, QB1 JR with me here, ready to go to work, breaking down rounds 1, 2, and 3 of the NFL draft, what's happened, what he liked. And then I also got, you know, backup QB extraordinaire, Saxy Prince, who'll be giving us insight like none other. Prince was actually on the ground at the facility with the Vikings today, kind of watching things unfold. And so he's going to be able to give us a little bit of the behind the scenes look, I guess, of how people were feeling on site. And if the mood at TCO matches the mood on Vikings Twitter about how things went with the Vikings. But we're also going to talk about the league just overall, about what happened, what we like, what we didn't. And then we're going to get up out of here because it's late. And I'm sure a lot of y'all probably got some draft fatigue, so no need for us to go too deep, too crazy. So let's hop to it. JR, my man, how you doing?
I'm good, man. You know, another day of the draft tomorrow, final day, or today, I should say. So I'm excited to see how this thing ends up.
Okay, and Saxy Prince, I guess before we really jump into this thing, man, how you doing? It's probably been a pretty long day for you too, huh?
Yeah, it's been an incredibly long day for me. Allergies are kind of on 11 right now, so I should have taken the day off, but I basically have one eye shut right now while driving home. So, yeah, it hasn't been great physically, but I think the draft has still been a fun and exciting time.
Oh, my man over here playing injured, driving back from TCO and podcasting all at the same time. We will not tell his insurance company any of these things, but JR, let's jump to it, okay? So we're going to get into day one and day two, and so let's start day one. And, you know, obviously we're going to talk about some Vikings thing here, but, you know, obviously you do the draft and you cover things and you've been on podcasts for really, you know, probably all the teams in the NFL at this point with all the work you were putting in there. So, you know, as things go, I guess, give me your general thoughts, feelings about, you know, the first day of the draft, how things went, what shocked you, what didn't, you know, what avenue you don't want to have your thing switched to because I won that bet.
Yeah, we might have to reconsider that because we ain't shake on that. But anyway, starting at the top, I mean, it was shocking to see Baker Mayfield go first. A lot of people didn't really expect him to go number one overall because it is a bit of a risk, him going that high, especially since he isn't the prototypical quarterback, so to speak. He's a guy that has a lot of outliers and he doesn't possess a lot of thresholds. So it was really shocking to see him go at the top. But if you think back a couple months when Scott McLuhan was unemployed or when he had just got fired by the Redskins, he came out and said that he would take Baker Mayfield over every single quarterback in this draft. And reportedly, he was a big advocate of him. And also Elliott Wolf, who was another executive in the Browns front office, formerly of the Green Bay Packers, was a big advocate of Mayfield as well. So they seem to have convinced John Dorsey to take Mayfield at the top. And the fit makes a lot of sense. I like the pick, actually. And it took some balls to make that pick. It took a huge leap of faith, and I love that they did it. It showed that they weren't scared. And the ironic thing about it is that they went with the most analytical approach and the guy that meets a lot of analytical requirements in Mayfield. So I love the pick at the top. I thought Denzel Ward was a bit of a reach for him. I like Denzel Ward as a prospect, but I just thought it was a bit of a reach at 4. I thought they could have got him if they wanted to slide back a bit more, or I thought they should have prioritized Bradley Chubb right there. But overall, I think the Browns have had a really good draft. And another thing that was interesting was just seeing how quick the quarterbacks flew off of the board. Obviously, Sam Darnold went at 3. Josh Allen went at 7, I think it was, to the Bills. And who am I missing? Josh Rosen went 10 to the Cardinals. So it was really interesting seeing how fast those quarterbacks were flying off of the board. And Lamar Jackson had to wait all the way to 32. So the quarterback storyline was definitely interesting. I think another interesting storyline was how high Marcus Davenport went to the Saints. A lot of people were shocked to see the Saints trade up for him and how much that they did give up, which was a first-round pick in next year's draft. And another storyline, which I thought was an incredible steal by the Chargers, was them getting Derwin James at 17. So there was a lot of interesting storylines on the first day of the draft.
And I guess in terms of the picks that were made, really with everyone, give me a handful of picks that you really, really like for a team's fits, or a GM that kind of moved around and played things in a way that you found was impressive. And I guess go on the other side as well with a couple of picks that really, I know you mentioned Marcus Davenport there, but I guess were there any other picks where you were like, whoa, what's happening there? Or that's maybe too soon for that player, I guess. How did you feel about the way people really went in and played the draft and the strategy that was used to kind of get these players?
Yeah, so Davenport was obviously the one I thought was a bit early for my liking. He was in my top 50 players, but I was a lot lower on him than most. I thought another pick that was a bit redundant was Vita Vea to the Buccaneers, especially after they signed Boy Allen. I believe that's how you say his name, from the Philadelphia Eagles. And they already had Gerald McCoy, of course. So I thought the pick was a bit redundant, and there were some other players that were higher up on the board. Obviously, Colton Miller, I think, was a huge reach by the Raiders, but they see that as an upside pick, and I just don't like the fit there because they need more of a for sure answer right now, and I just don't like the mixture with him and Tom Cable there, especially going 15 overall. I thought that was a huge reach. On the flip side, I love what the Green Bay Packers did, and I know a lot of fans are going to be rubbed the wrong way by that, but I thought they had a fantastic first round, sliding back and getting Jaire Alexander after trading back up, after sliding back and getting another first-round pick in 2019 from the Saints and still getting a top-10 player on my board in Jaire Alexander. I thought that was a phenomenal pick. Another pick that I did love was Isaiah Wynn to the Patriots. I thought that was a very, very good pick, and a sneaky good pick by the Patriots, because now they have Trent Brown, who they traded for today from the 49ers in-house. So they have a plethora of options at tackle, and maybe they want to slide Wynn inside to guard. So they have some flexibility on what they want to do there. Another pick that I did dislike was Rashad Penny to the Seahawks at 27, I believe it was. So I thought that was a bit of a reach, and they probably could have got him in the second or the third round if they wanted to. But obviously he was higher on their board, and they went and got him. I just felt like they didn't need to do it that early in the draft.
I mean, to be fair, there'd been rumblings among draft Twitter for a little while now that, Rashad Penny might be the second running back to go. While I don't agree with him going there, I mean, folks have been saying for a little while Penny had been climbing up evaluators' boards, probably because, his production was through the roof and all that wonderful stuff. But I tried to told y'all sometimes you should know. Anyway, no need to go down all that. It was a first round running back, so I can't really stand for that pick too hard. As you reminded me earlier today. So, I'll stop with all that. Saxy Prince, round one. We won't keep you too long. We don't want you to be too distracted while you're moving down the road here. But I guess round one, what were the big things you took away? What picks did you like? Which ones did you really not like? And I guess what were your general thoughts on how things went around the league and then for the Vikings?
Yeah, I think more speaking generally, I think this the first round really showed that the draft was going to be a really weird, this is going to be a really unusual draft. I think it's going to be pretty atypical. I mean, JR had mentioned Rashad Penny going in the first round. He's not a guy that I saw even going in the first three rounds, maybe in the third round. So you obviously seen him, I think, Terrell Edmonds. So just obviously some picks that you saw that were going a little bit higher than we might have expected. Obviously, the Marcus Davenport pick was huge. I do love the Jaire Alexander pick. I mean, when you kind of break it down as is, I mean, basically the Packers had selected him with like a third round pick. So, I mean, it's hard to, as a Viking fan, to really give them kudos for what they've been doing. But, some of the moves that they have been making have been fantastic. One of my favorite picks of the draft is another NFC North team. The Bears getting Roquan Smith. I think that's a fantastic pick. I didn't really see him sliding that far because I think he probably is the best linebacker in the draft. So yeah, I think there was a lot of, just to reiterate, I think this draft has kind of proven to be a little bit more difficult for a lot of teams, and it's making things a little bit harder on the back end. I do like the Viking selection. Mike Hughes has said it on Twitter. I think he's a fantastic player. I think he can really step in and really contribute right away. I think he can be your third cornerback as well as being your kick returner, punt returner as well too. And the problem comes, you know, I mean, I know we'll chop it up a little bit later, is, you know, when I look at the Vikings and when I look at other teams, why they selected the people that they selected, knowing, you know, they had specific needs. And I know that best player available becomes draft philosophy, but something that we saw, you know, roughly in that 20 spot is we saw, the run on interior offensive linemen. And, you know, when you saw Billy Price go off the board, when you saw Isaiah Wynn go off the board, when you saw Frank Ragnow go off the board, I think it should have alerted the teams who maybe wanted to get an interior offensive lineman but wanted to wait so they kind of could get into that money spot. Maybe that was something that they need to consider to change up their draft philosophy. So, I mean, with that, I think, like I said, I still love the Mike Hughes pick. I really love everything that NFC North has done. But specifically, I think the Bears have kind of become probably one of my favorite teams so far who have drafted in, you know, first round and obviously the subsequent rounds as well too.
Yeah, I mean, all that's fair and all that's very good analysis. And obviously we've been chopping it up about this stuff kind of offline here for a little while. I guess from my perspective, as I kind of think about the draft overall, most of my analysis is based off, you know, starting from JR's, you know, draft guide, big board, and kind of working from there. And so obviously for me, the biggest two reaches, we'll say, in the first round were Terrell Edmonds, who, was, I think, a fifth round grade from JR, third round grade from Dane Brugler. Him going in the first round was surprising, to say the least. And then after that, Josh Allen. I mean, we knew it was going to happen, but again, he's in, maybe for next year's edition of the Draft Commandments, we'll update that and add it in. You know, we have beware like the late rising uber athletic wide receiver. You know, eventually, I guess with where the league is going, maybe we will be able to upgrade it to beware the late rising tall Caucasian quarterback with the big arm who can't throw any passes to his own wide receivers or something like that. Like, I just don't understand it. JR, I think, had a fourth round grade or a third round grade on Josh Allen. And for him to go in the seventh spot with them trading up and giving away the assets they gave for him, just seems crazy to me. Like, for a player who's never had a completion percentage over 60% going back to high school through JUCO in D1 AA, like, I don't understand that pick. And then for them to come in the press conference and talk about like the snow and his big hand, like, come on, like come on, man. what are you doing out there? Anyway, JR, you popped in when I started talking quarterback, so I feel like you got something you need to say.
I just hate the weather excuse when trying to validate a quarterback, a big arm quarterback. I can't stand that. I just wish you could shoot that narrative to the moon and it never comes back.
I mean, it's not like it's snowing in Buffalo for the majority of the season. Like, they got to win games in the fall too.
Right.
they're making all these plans for when it's cold in the playoffs. Like, you're going to need to win some games to get there. And you probably want a quarterback who can complete some passes or something to help you do that. Like, but I think the thing that I took away more than anything from all of this, because I don't really want to talk about the moves I like the most, because you guys have touched on them, and they're the teams in our division that we dislike the most. Like, I think the Packers killed it. I think the Bears are doing a really great job, and I don't really want to talk about that. I think the biggest takeaway from the first round and, obviously the subsequent rounds as well, is why trading back is the strategy that your team should always look to employ if they can employ it in a way that, fits within, I guess, what they feel is comfortable from a, return on investment standpoint. But there's so much variance in the draft. Like, as we're looking at this board, you look at Arif's consensus big board, you look at JR's top 150, and then you look at where these picks are going. There is just so much variance. Everyone thinks they know where all these players are going to go. Everyone seems to think they know who's good or who teams think are good, and no one knows. Like, Mike Mayock almost had an aneurysm on live television when they picked Baker Mayfield number one overall. Like, he seemed livid. Like, he seemed really upset. But I also feel like he thought that he knew who the Browns were going to pick and was upset when it went a different way, which is kind of like anyone who does a mock draft. Like, within two picks, the mock draft was completely destroyed. And that's why you trade back, because, you know, you might be able to trade back, get a first for the following season, and still get JR's number one cornerback to start for your team. Damn.
You said that real mad.
You know, Green Bay. God.
Disappointing. Yeah,
this is so disappointing that they're doing so well in this draft. But
we got to see them twice a year, which sucks.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things. This is Green Bay going in with one of them Randy Moss drafts, though. They're like, oh, man, Dealing and Diggs out there. We got to go and get all the cornerbacks. Just right. All of them. All of them. But, yeah, I guess with that, you know, and obviously understanding that, you know, team trade back is something that we all really believe in. Get more shots in the draft if you can. But I guess, you know, the next part of that, to be fair, is for me, is if you don't get a trade that, you know, feels good to you or feels like you're getting the proper value, don't just trade back to trade back. Like, there needs to be a return that you're getting on your investment for giving up the pick that you have. And if you can't trade back, pick a premium position, which is why, you know, when Twitter was burning down today about the Mike Hughes pick, I was fine with it. Like, if you're going to stay, if you have to make a pick, pick a good player at a premium position, and cornerback is the most important position on defense. You have to be able to cover. Xavier Rhodes is good. Trey Waynes is kind of good. Terrence Newman played a lot last year. He's 40, still not signed. Mac Alexander, little up and down. None of us want to see Sherrills ever have to take the field. That's a lot of uncertainty in the most important position on the Vikings defense, which is why I think you've seen Zimmer really target that position with first round picks, because you need good corners in the league. It's not the league we grew up watching, with seven step drops and pass rushers being the most important. The ball is coming out quick. You need guys who can cover. So that's why I was okay with the Mike Hughes pick. I'm still okay with the pick. But obviously, in the moment with that pick happening, you know, a lot has changed since then. We get into round two, and I was shocked because, you know, I wasn't watching the second round live. I was at jujitsu and came back and was getting caught up and updating spreadsheets, and was very shocked to see Austin Corbett, guard from Nevada, go with the first pick in the second round. I guess first thing, JR, what was your thought when Austin Corbett went with the first pick on day two? Because that seems a little early based on where you and most everyone else I've seen online had him.
Yeah, and I mean, there was a lot of reports out there about NFL teams really liking Corbett, a guy that reminded a lot of them of Joe Bitonio, who actually is another very successful interior offensive lineman for the Browns. So obviously there was some appeal, or a lot of appeal, from the Browns for him. I mean, he's a guy that started 48 straight games, has versatility at guard and tackle, and some teams that are even believing that he can slide inside to center as well. So he's a guy that has versatility at all five positions, a guy that's a two-time team captain. So a guy that's very well respected and well thought of in NFL circles. So I think it was a home run pick for them. Now it'll be interesting to see exactly where they do play Corbett, because they do have a huge hole at left tackle. And maybe they can slide a guy like Joe Bitonio out to tackle and move Corbett inside to guard. So they have some flexibility there with their offensive line now, and they need to find a way to replace Joe Thomas. And I was just really surprised to see him go with the first pick in the second round. I would have never expected that.
Yeah, that was crazy. And I guess keeping things moving along with, you know, kind of how the draft started to play out there, because, you know, I came out of the gym and looked at my phone and had 102 missed messages in the group chat. So, you know, I could not read all of them. So kind of as things were playing out, and Yinka, feel free to jump in anywhere here. I guess, what was the mood between, I guess, you know, you guys, you were kind of tweeting back and forth, watching everything, or messaging back and forth. And I guess also Prince, with you being kind of in the middle of everything there, you know, on site in the facility. I guess what was the mood on the ground that you were experiencing? So I guess Prince, if you want to kick off, and then we can go back to JR, and we can just figure out, I guess, how was it as the draft played out, and you know, how did it feel from your perspective as you were watching it live, Prince?
Yeah, I'll kind of touch on both of those things at the same time. One thing that I definitely felt is once the Brian O'Neill pick happened and there wasn't really any movement as far as that, I guess the draft felt as if it wasn't going the way that we thought it was going to go. The Brian O'Neill pick, like, obviously he's super athletic. We know that for a fact. He used to play tight end. He's a guy that obviously he is quite a bit of a project. I know that he probably will be a really good future tackle someday. But when that pick happened and knowing that he was a kind of player that, you know, he's not going to be a day one starter in your second round, something felt like, okay, I don't feel as if the Vikings are having a really great draft like we're used to. It's not, in no way was like, it didn't feel like 2016 not great, but it definitely didn't feel like that 2015 draft where I'm like, man, the Vikings are really getting a lot of value from the position in which they're picking. And then you started, just talking to a lot of the beat writers and like the guys like Arif and other people who were on the, I mean, they kind of felt the same way as that, kind of that same atmosphere that exists. It's just like, it didn't feel as if the Vikings were very optimistic with their picks. Something that I touched on it before, we kind of knew going into this draft that it was going to be really different and in a sense, a little bit divergent because of the fact that you had a lot of, you had positions that were, you know, they were really deep, but they weren't very good. At the very top, like wide receiver, you really didn't have that, like, this is definitely the guy, this is going to be the number one wide receiver off everyone's board. He's at the top of the top. But you obviously had a lot of depth at the position, like wide receiver was one. And then you had the opposite where you had, you know, obviously some of those top offensive linemen, those guards who were very, very good at the top. But once you got out of those, top guys, it started to drop off as far as talent level that you would need to, you know, kind of those plug and play players. So then obviously once we get into, you probably heard the Rick Spielman press conference and stuff. He didn't give a vote of confidence with what the Vikings were doing, which is why they traded out of that third round. I think Spielman really wanted to say, like, hey, there was a few guys we wanted. We thought he was going to fall to our lap, but he didn't. So they decided to trade out. And that was the feeling. It was the feeling of, you know, they clearly went into this draft wanting an offensive lineman. I think that was very, very clear. I think they wanted a corner as well, too. But obviously, knowing how deep the cornerback position was in this draft and knowing how honestly, like, scarce the once you dropped off that those top interior offensive linemen, you know, you are picking projects like O'Neal. So, like, that was just the general feeling on the ground. It was just like, okay, maybe this is not the greatest draft. I definitely want to encourage people who are on the edge to walk away from it, because it's not bad by any means. I think I love Mike Hughes the player. It did change how I felt about the pick though, once I saw the Brian O'Neill pick. I'm saying I love the player, don't love the pick, mostly because I no longer feel as if the value of, you know, what we got in the second round and probably what we're going to get later on is going to, I don't think Hughes is going to be able to hold that up by himself as being that first round pick, even though I think he's going to add a lot of value to the Vikings for what they need. So given that, I just didn't feel as if the Vikings did very good with their risk management for this draft. It already was a difficult draft to manage as far as risks and stuff. But, as soon as you saw Ragnow, Wynn, and Billy Price go off the board, I think that's something that Spielman really should have maybe go to, you know, plan W of like, okay, we just have to assume that the top offensive linemen guys are going to fly off the board like they did in that first round. So let's draw back up. Let's see if we can trade. Let's see if we can maybe, if we have to take a guy that we didn't want to have to take, as far as in the interior offense lineman, maybe we should go take that guy now and not find ourselves trying to take a project in the second round. Because me personally, I don't want to take any projects at offensive line in the second round. I just don't. I want like a plug and play type player, especially on the interior. And we are kind of already know that the guard position, that second round, is where you can really hit on day one ready to start. So overall, not too optimistic, but I in no way I feel like people should be pessimistic, because I definitely feel like you still have a really good player in my queues, and I think Brian O'Neill can definitely become a really good player too.
One thing I guess I want to say that I think is kind of funny as we kind of look at this is that we go into the draft, and I guess and I've been guilty of this myself, so this isn't, you know, me kind of, you know, preaching to anyone. I've done this very thing. But we go into the draft with this idea that we know what's going to happen in the draft, which kind of anchors us in a belief that we have an idea about what players are actually worth or what players should go where. And then as soon as the draft starts, all of the things we thought we know go away, because all the players go in a different order than we thought they should go in. But then we still use what we thought we knew before the draft to kind of determine who did well and who didn't. And it's just a strange place, I guess, to be. Like, I guess if the Hughes pick was a good pick yesterday, it was a good pick yesterday, regardless of what happened today, because you made a strategic decision at that time based on the information you had, you know, at the time. And especially given that the need that we have, the big glaring need that folks keep talking about on the offensive line, is a guard, which is, I mean, fundamentally, it's the least important position on your offense. Does anyone on this pod know the all-pro guards from last year off the top of their head, and if their teams did anything in the playoffs or anything? I don't. Like, it's not that important of a position, you know? So, like, for them to go out with this team, especially, you know, with the Vikings being a team that is fairly complete, not a lot of holes, you went and you got someone who was at an important position, and all the interior offensive linemen went off the board that you wanted, but you went and got a tackle, which is a more important position than guard, and you still have flexibility because you guys have guys who maybe can slide inside. You could potentially put, you know, O'Neal on the Lane Johnson track and put him at right tackle to start, you know, give him reps there until maybe at some point down the road he's able to move over and be your left tackle of the future. Like, there's options that you have with the pick, and you got a guy at a position that is a premium one that is probably more difficult to get guys in free agency for. So I don't know. For whatever reason, even though people don't seem to love the pick, like, I'm not on the ledge with this one, just because I feel like they bounced back and got, you know, players that evaluators, like, the worst thing that any evaluators have said about, you know, O'Neal is that, yeah, he probably needs to get in the weight room a little bit, right? And obviously that's going to happen when he goes into the NFL. So I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see how the rest of it goes. I'm just not in a place where I think I can panic with the O'Neal pick. And Hughes, I think, just, you know, based on the analysis I've read from JR, the things that Miles has had to say about him, I feel like he's going to be a great player at a position that is the most important position that we need on the defense. So far, I'm okay.
And you're not wrong by any means as far as, like, not panicking. And that's kind of what I said before. I don't really feel anybody should be in panic mode right now. I think that's I think that more so plays into that, you know, people are just like, oh, well, this person's going to be gone. This person's going to be gone. I wanted this guy. Not looking at it that way, but also looking at it from, like I was saying before, kind of like a risk management type situation. I don't think that the Vikings did a very good job managing the risk that could potentially happen in the draft.
Oh no, they definitely messed up in the draft. Like, that's a given. Like, we're all in agreement that they had a strategy that they wanted to go with. They had a strategy. It was probably that they'd mapped out, you know, with options A, B, C, D, E, and, you know, they thought that they were good, and that didn't work out for them. I guess where I'm at with it is that A, the position of need they were looking to fill was a guard, and yes, you need to have a full offensive line. You need to have guys who can go out there and play. But if there is a position that they were going to need, quote unquote, and not get early and miss out on it, I'm kind of okay with that position being a guard versus it being some other position that's more vital to us winning and losing games. Like, there's still options, A, for them to add players who potentially would be upside picks for them that can play guard at this later on in the draft. they still have players on the roster they can shuffle around and get by, because ultimately, I guess when I'm looking at it, I don't think they need like a Dallas Cowboys of a couple years ago line. They need a line that is average to above average. And if they can get there, I think we'll be good. But JR, I feel like you got something to say.
Yeah, I think that what a lot of people, including us, weren't really expecting was that a lot of people were expecting a win-now draft, or fans were expecting a win-now draft. And it's really not that way with the way that they have drafted so far. They're really drafting for the future, if that makes sense, because you have insurance now for Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander down the road with Mike Hughes. Now, Mike Hughes' biggest contributions will probably come in the special teams department, because we've all seen that it's really hard for defensive backs to come in right away in a Mike Zimmer type system and contribute during their first year. It just doesn't necessarily happen because the scheme is so hard and the techniques that he and Jerry Gray asked them to play are really difficult. So you rarely ever see a defensive back come in from day one or even year one, come in and make those immediate contributions. And then on a Brian O'Neill pick, obviously that's a huge potential pick or project pick, because he's probably not going to start from day one. I don't think he's a guy that needs to start from day one, because he needs to gain some strength and get better in that footwork category. He has some things that he needs to clean up as well. So I think that's what's really rubbing fans the wrong way, because this is more of a futures draft or team building draft over the long haul, as opposed to a win now draft.
Yeah, that's fair. And there's definitely been some folks who you can tell who they are. Like, I feel by and large, with the exception of a snarky comment here and there, that everyone, you know, all of us have kind of come around to the fact Kirk Cousins is the quarterback. You need to build around him for the future. And that's what it is. He's here. Let's figure it out. Let's go. But you could really tell that, like, this draft, there were still some open wounds about the, you know, signing of Kirk Cousins and the fully guaranteed contract and all of that stuff for certain people in Vikings Twitter. And the fact, like you said, JR, that we didn't draft with a must win now, must do everything to give Kirk Cousins everything he needs right now in this very moment, or make it seem that that's what we were doing in this draft, really has seemed to rub folks the wrong way. And I'm not going to lie, I think going into the draft, a lot of us probably thought this was going to happen too. But I guess tempering that with the fact that they got what appear to be A, and Hughes, a good player, a player who's actually demonstrated that he's good already, and O'Neill, a player who, you know, offensive line evaluators who I respect because their work seems to pan out when folks transition from college to the pros, seem to think O'Neill is going to be a decent pick for us. So we'll see. We'll let it play out. Step off the ledge a little bit here. I mean, it's not like we're the Oakland Raiders.
I have something else to say too, Jason.
Yeah,
so
yeah, go for it, man.
We all admitted that they did misplay the interior offensive line situation. I mean, that's a given. We didn't expect Austin Corbett to go with the first pick in the second round. Everyone knew that Will Hernandez was going to go 34, the second pick on day two. Now, where I think the Vikings really started to panic, or they started to sweat, was when Braden Smith went with the fifth pick in the second round. So I started getting really nervous there too, because I knew a run on offensive line was coming at that spot too. And I don't think they expected Braden Smith to go that early. And I mean, Connor Williams was a given to go to the Cowboys at the 50th pick overall, the 18th pick on day two. So the pickings were really slim when they got to their point at 62. And I mean, O'Neill probably was one of the better guys left on the board, because there is some injury concerns out there about Tyrell Crosby's foot and the whole situation surrounding that. So I'm not sure if they felt comfortable picking him there. And I don't know what the situation is with Jamarco Jones and why he tested so bad at the combine and why he's sliding. So I don't have enough information on that. But Jamarco Jones does have more upside than what Brian O'Neill does at this point, but I don't know how they had it on their board. But obviously they had O'Neill on their board because they drafted him here at the 62nd spot. But I mean, O'Neill may turn out to end up, he may end up being a good player. We don't know. So let's just let it play out and let's see where it goes from here.
Yeah. And I guess with the O'Neill pick, you know, just to put you on the spot, JR, I guess, you know, I guess other than Lorenzo Carter, I guess, were there any players that were picked kind of in the range shortly after O'Neill that you would have preferred the Vikings to really target if they weren't able to trade out of that spot?
I was hoping for, if they didn't go offensive line, maybe a guy like Ronnie Harrison, who ended up slipping. I thought he would have been a good pick there. Justin Reed would have been another guy that would have been a good pick that they had on the top 30 visit. Even a guy like a B.J. Hill from NC State, who went about a few picks after. I think he went 5 or 6 picks after they picked O'Neal as well. So there were some guys who I had ranked higher on my board at that spot. And even a guy like Nathan Shepherd went after that pick as well. So there obviously were some guys I had higher on my board. But Spielman wanted to get that offensive lineman. And his comments, his press conference this after or this tonight or last night, I should say, were kind of disturbing to me because I feel like they reached on this pick and they kind of got locked into taking an offensive lineman here. So, like I said, we'll see where it goes from here. O'Neal may end up being Joe Thomas or something. We don't know. So it'll be interesting to see how it does end up.
And then, and all that when they could have just waited on Note Boom, you know?
That's and your guy.
I read one article. That's my guy now. It's my guy, but you know, we drafted a guy with a similar similar, I guess, athletic profile. So, you know, I guess that's another reason I can't be too mad at the O'Neal pick. It was just supposed to be that athletic profile and like 30 picks plus later. But you know, it's whatever. We will make it work. Like you said, you know, he could be Joe Thomas 2.0. Probably not, but you know, he could be. I guess with that, you know, and all of that, you know, Viking specific stuff, I guess overall. And, you know, it pains me to say it, so I'm not going to say it. But, Prince, you go first on this. From your perspective, rounds 1, 2, 3 in the books. Man, who's killing it so far? Who's doing their thing? Whose drafts do you like the most so far?
I'll give you I kind of want to give you two, but I'll at least give you one. NFC North, Chicago Bears. I think they're absolutely killing it. I think they've given Trubisky help on the offensive line. I think they've helped their defense tremendously. I have to go with Chicago Bears. I think that they are doing a fantastic job with getting not only great players, but also great value with the players that they're picking. So that's my pick.
Yeah, can't be mad at that. And just kind of the analysis that I've been doing following along using JR's big board and then the positional values and the hit rates and all that stuff. I have Chicago right now. They are number 5 in terms of the average quality of the player they've added so far. And they are number 7 in terms of the overall draft value they've added in terms of the picks in total. So yeah, they're doing really well. And I hate it. Hate all of it. Really don't like it. JR, how about you, man?
So Yinka took my answer with the Bears. That's probably my favorite right now. But another one that I absolutely love is the Cowboys. I think they filled a lot of positions of need. Obviously, their biggest positions of need coming to the draft were defensive tackle, guard, and wide receiver, and inside linebacker. So they checked off 3 of those boxes. They got a great interior linebacker in Leighton Vander Esch, who they can pair with Jalen Smith now in the interior over the long haul, now that Sean Lee is getting a little bit up there in age. Now they have 2 fast linebackers on the interior for the foreseeable future. They have their answer at left guard now, which was the biggest hole at interior offensive line. And Connor Williams, they're probably going to plug and play him at left guard and put him beside Travis Frederick and Tyron Smith. I just think that's a fantastic fit in them getting that value at pick number 50. And then one of my draft crushes, Michael Gallup, they got him at pick number 81. Obviously, they knew that they had a big hole at wide receiver, so he can come in and fill Dez Bryant's shoes and be that big X receiver that they need out on the perimeter. So I love what the Dallas Cowboys have done.
Okay. And I'm going to say I low-key like what Carolina's done. You know, Cam was out there begging for help in wingdings on his Instagram. And it looks like they finally got the message that maybe they should get Cam a receiver.
Wait, you can read the font he types in Instagram?
Well, usually when he types something in Instagram that's newsworthy, somebody will then take it and decipher it and put it in an article. Because Lord knows I do not have the time to try to decipher what Cam Newton is posting on Instagram. But yeah, there's some teams that are doing their thing. But you know, now we get into it where you know, I guess no GMs are actually good at this part of the draft. Like, you know, every now and again, you'll get some players, you know, But most GMs aren't good at this. Actually, no GMs are really good at any part of the draft, which is what we see. It's one of those things that we see. They're all bad at this. Like last year, the Saints killed it in the draft. Like the Saints draft set them up for, the deep playoff run that they had. And then this year in the first round of the draft, they get pantsed by Green Bay, you know? So it's just, the draft is hard. Picking players is hard. And none of these GMs are good at it. And I think maybe we all should just calm down a little bit with the freaking out, especially when we're only halfway through the whole thing. But I guess before we get this thing wrapped up, because I know it is getting late, and I still have to chop this thing up and get it on the internet. I guess, Prince, was there any final words, any final thoughts, anything that you wanted to get out and let the people know about? And then, JR, same question to you after Prince is done.
All I got to say is Kool-Aid ending no matter what. That's it.
Yes, sir. It's tough to follow, JR.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's very hard. I mean, the Vikings have a lot of picks left in the draft. And, I mean, this is where Rick Spielman makes his money. That's why they call him Trader Rick. So there's a lot of value left on the board. Let's see exactly what he does with it. Still have a need at tight end. Running back, I like to see him get some interior defensive line depth as well. And he has a lot of picks to play with tomorrow. So I can't wait to see what he does.
Awesome. Well, gentlemen, thanks for coming on, recording with me today. And I guess I'll be talking to you pretty soon because the draft wraps up tomorrow. So, y'all have a good night, get some sleep, and we'll do this thing again soon.